Chapter 29. Memories of Saldea. Lying on his bed in the dark, in his shirt sleeves, Kadir idly twirled one of his large kerchiefs between his hands. The wagon's open windows let in moonlight, but not much breeze. At least Kyrian was cooler than the waste. Someday he hoped to return to Saldea, to walk in the garden where his sister Theodora had taught him his first letters and numbers. He missed her as much as he did Saldea. The deep winters when trees burst from their sap freezing, and the only way to travel was by snowshoes or skis. In these southlands, spring felt like summer, and summer like the pit of doom. Sweat rolled out of him in streams. With a heavy sigh, he pushed his fingers into a small gap where the bed was built into the wagon. The folded scrap of parchment rustled. He left it there. He knew the words on it by heart. "You are not alone among strangers. A way has been chosen." Just that, without signature, of course. He had found it slipped under his door when he retired for the night. There was a town, not a quarter of a mile away, Ironrod, but even if a soft bed remained empty there, he doubted whether the Aiel would allow him to spend a night away from the wagons, or that the Aes Sedai would. For the moment, his plans fit in well enough with Moraine's. Perhaps he would get to see Tarvalin again. A dangerous place for his sort, but the work there was always important and invigorating. He put his mind back on the note, though he wished he could afford to ignore it. The word chosen made him sure it came from another dark friend. The first surprise had been receiving it now after crossing most of Kyrian. Nearly 2 months ago, right after Jason Attale attached himself to Randall Thor, for reasons the man had never deigned to explain, and his new partner, Kylie Shaogi, had disappeared, he suspected she was buried in the waist with a thrust from Natale's knife through her heart and small riddance. Soon after that, he had been visited by one of the Chosen, by Lanfear herself. She had given him his instructions. Automatically, his hand went to his chest, feeling through his shirt the scars branded there. He mopped his face with the kerchief. Part of his mind thought coldly, as it had at least once a day since, that they were an effective way to prove to him that it had not been an ordinary dream. An ordinary nightmare. Another part of him almost gibbered with relief that she had not returned. The second surprise of the note had been the hand. A woman's hand, unless he missed his guess by a mile, and some of the letters formed in what he now knew for an Aiel way. Natale had told him that there must be dark friends among the Aiel. There were dark friends in every land, among every people. But he had never wanted to find brothers in the waste. Aiel would kill you as soon as look at you, and you could put a foot wrong with them by breathing. Taken all in all, the note spelled disaster. Possibly Natale had told some Aiel dark friend who he was. Angrily twirling the kerchief to a long, thin cord, he snapped it tight between his hands. If the Gleeman and Kylie had not had proofs that they stood high in Dark Friend councils, he would have killed them both before going near the waste. The only other possibility made his stomach leaden. A way has been chosen. Maybe that had only been to put the word chosen down, and maybe it was meant to tell him that one of the Chosen had decided to use him. The note had not come from Lanfear. She would simply have spoken to him in his dreams once more. In spite of the heat, he shivered. Yet he had to wipe his face again, too. He had the feeling that Lanfear was a jealous mistress to serve. But if another of the Chosen wanted him, he would have no choice. Despite all the promises made when he had given his oaths as a boy, he was a man of few illusions. Caught between two of the Chosen, he could be flattened like a kitten beneath a wagon wheel, and they would notice as much as the wagon did. He wished he were home in Saldea. He wished he could see Theodora again. A scraping at the door brought him to his feet. For all his bulk, he was more agile than he let anyone see. Mopping his face and neck, he made his way past the brick stove that he certainly had no need for here, and the cabinets with their ornately carved and painted uprights. When he pulled the door open, a slender figure swathed in black robes scurried in past him. He took one quick look around the moonlit darkness to make certain no one was watching. The drivers were all snoring beneath the other wagons, and the Aiel guards never came among the wagons themselves, and quickly shut the door again.
"You must be hot, Isendra," he chuckled. "Take off that robe and make yourself comfortable."
"Thank you, no," she said bitterly from the shadowed depths of her cowl.
She stood stiffly, but every now and then she twitched. The wool must be even itchier than usual tonight. He chuckled again.
"As you wish."
Beneath those robes, he suspected, the maidens of the spear still allowed her to wear nothing but the stolen jewelry, if that. She had become prudish in ways since the maidens had her. Why the woman had been stupid enough to steal, he could not understand. He had certainly made no objections when they dragged her screaming from the wagon by her hair. He was only glad that they had not thought he was involved. Her greediness had certainly made his task more difficult.
"Have you anything to report on Althor and Atael?"
A major part of Lanfear's instruction had been to keep a close eye on those two, and he knew no better way to keep an eye on a man than to put a woman in his bed. Any man told his bedmate things he had vowed to keep secret, boasted of his plans, revealed his weaknesses. Even if he was the dragon reborn, and this Dawn fellow, the Aiel called him. She shuddered visibly.
"At least I can come near Natale."
Come near him? Once the maidens had caught her sneaking to the man's tent, they had practically begun stuffing her into it every night. She always put the best face on matters.
"Not that he tells me anything. Wait, be patient, keep silent, make accommodation with fate, whatever that means. He says that every time I try to ask a question. For the most part, all he wants to do is play music I've never heard before and make love."
She never had anything more to say about the Gleeman. For the 100th time, he wondered why Lanfear wanted Natale watched. The man was supposed to be as high as a dark friend could reach, only a step below the Chosen themselves.
"I take it that means you still have not managed to wriggle into Althor's bed?" he asked, brushing past her to sit down on the bed.
"No,"
she writhed uncomfortably.
"Then you will have to try harder, won't you? I am growing tired of failure, Isendra, and our masters are not as patient as I. He's only a man, whatever his titles."
She had often boasted to him that she could have any man she wanted and make him do whatever she wanted. She had shown him the truth of her boasts. She had not needed to steal jewelry. He would have bought her anything she wanted. He had bought her more than he could afford.
"The bloody maidens can't watch him every second, and once you are in his bed, he'll not let them harm you."
One taste of her would be enough for that.
"I have full faith and confidence in your abilities."
"No."
If anything, the word was shorter this time. He rolled and unrolled the kerchief irritably.
"No is not a word our masters like to hear, Isendra."
That meant their lords among the Dark Friends. Not all lords or ladies, by any means. A groom might give orders to a lady, a beggar to a magistrate. But their commands were at least as strictly enforced as any noble's, and usually more so.
"Not a word our mistress will like to hear."
Isendra shuddered. She had not believed his tale until he showed her the burns on his chest, but since then, one mention of Lanfear had been enough to quell any rebellion on her part. This time she began to weep.
"I cannot, Adnan. When we stopped tonight, I thought I might have a chance in a town instead of tents, but they caught me before I got within 10 paces of him."
She pushed back her hood, and he gaped as moonlight played over her bare scalp. Even her eyebrows were gone.
"They shaved me, Adnan. Adeline and Anila and Jolene. They held me down and shaved every hair. They beat me with nettles, Adnan."
She shook like a sapling in high wind, sobbing slack-mouthed and mumbling the words.
"I hit you from shoulders to knees, and I burned too much to scratch. They said they'd make me wear nettles the next time I so much as looked in his direction. They meant it, Adnan. They did. They said they'd give me to Avienda, and they told me what she would do.
I cannot, Adnan. Not again. I cannot.
Stunned, he stared at her. She had had such lovely dark hair. Yet she was beautiful enough that even being bald as an egg only made her seem exotic. Her tears and sagging face detracted only a little. If she could put herself into Althor's bed for just one night. It was not going to happen. The maidens had broken her. He had broken people himself, and he knew the signs. Eagerness to avoid more punishments became eagerness to obey. The mind never wanted to admit it was running from something, so she would soon convince herself that she really wanted to obey, that she really wanted nothing more than to please the maidens. "What does Avienda have to do with it?" he muttered. How soon before Isandra felt the need to confess her sins as well.
"Althor has been betting her since Ruidian, you fool! She spends every night with him. The maidens think she will marry him."
Even through her sobs he could detect resentful fury. She would not like it that another had succeeded where she failed. Doubtless that was why she had not told him before. Avienda was a beautiful woman, despite her fierce eyes, full-breasted compared to most of the maidens. Yet he would stack Isandra against her, if only... Isandra slumped in the moonlight coming through the windows, quivering from head to toe, sobbing open-mouthed, tears rolling down her cheeks that she did not even bother to wipe away. She would grovel on the ground if Avienda frowned at her.
"Very well," he said gently. "If you cannot, then you cannot. You can still pry something out of Natale. I know you can."
Rising, he took her shoulders to turn her toward the door. She flinched away from his touch, but she did turn.
"Natale will not want to look at me for days,"
she said petulantly around hiccups and sniffs. Sobs threatened to break out again any moment, but his tone seemed to have soothed her.
"I'm red, Adnan. As red as if I had laid naked in the sun for a day. And my hair, it will take forever to grow back."
As she reached for the door, her eyes going to the handle, he had the kerchief spun to a cord in an instant and around her neck. He tried to ignore her rasping gurgles, the frantic scraping of her feet on the floor. Her fingers clawed at his hands, but he stared straight ahead. Even keeping his eyes open, he saw Teodora. He always did when he killed a woman. He had loved his sister, but she had discovered what he was, and she would not have kept silent. Isandra's heels drummed violently, but after what seemed an eternity, they slowed, went still, and she became a dead weight dragging at his hands. He held the cord tight for a count of 60 before unwinding it and letting her fall. She would have been confessing next, confessing to being a dark friend, pointing a finger at him. Rummaging in the cabinets by touch, he pulled out a butchering knife. Disposing of a whole corpse would be difficult, but luckily the dead did not bleed much. The robe would absorb what little there was. Maybe he could find the woman who had left the note under his door. If she was not pretty enough, she must have friends who were also dark friends. Natale would not care if it was an Aiel woman who visited him. Kadir would rather have bedded a viper himself. Aiel were dangerous. And maybe an Aiel would have a better chance than Isandra against Avienda. Kneeling, he hummed quietly to himself as he worked, a lullaby that Teodora had taught to him.